Welcome back to HN Pod, your daily breakdown of the top stories and discussions from Hacker News. I am Sarah.
And I am Mike. Today is Friday, April 10th, 2026, and this is episode 361. We are covering all the top stories that hit the front page yesterday, April 9th.
We have a really packed show today for you. We are talking about the long-awaited arrival of Little Snitch on Linux, the Electronic Frontier Foundation officially logging off of X, Meta blocking ads for lawsuits against itself, a big update and donation push from Thunderbird, and a frankly wild geopolitical story about the Pentagon threatening the Vatican.
Let us jump right in. First up, with over 1,200 points, Little Snitch for Linux. Sarah, if you have ever used a Mac, you probably know Little Snitch. It is the gold standard for application firewalls. It lets you see and block exactly which apps are phoning home.
Right, and Linux users have been asking for this for years. Objective Development finally released it, and they are doing it using eBPF, which is a really powerful way to hook into the Linux network stack directly in the kernel. You do need kernel 6.12 or higher for this to work, though.
The interesting thing they point out in their release notes is the difference between privacy and security. They explicitly say this is built for privacy, not for hardening a system against a determined attacker. On macOS, they can use deep pocket inspection, but on Linux, eBPF has strict limits on storage and complexity.
The Hacker News comments were really digging into those technical limitations. A user named MixedBit asked a great question about whether you could block a specific suspicious Python script while allowing Firefox, and if that script could just use a subprocess to call Firefox and exfiltrate data that way.
And the developers actually chimed in. They explained that Little Snitch for Linux uses a two-level namespace, tracking both the process and its parent. But it gets tricky. Another user pointed out that to really block a script, you might end up having to block the whole Python interpreter, depending on how you write your rules.
Of course, Mike. It would not be a Linux desktop release with some immediate technical drama. A user named SuperNez tried it on Fedora 43 and said it maxed out all their CPU cores and dumped 50,000 lines into the journal before crashing.
Yeah, another user said it crashed their machine so hard they could not even load their desktop environment and had to boot into a backup. It turns out there is a bug with the BTRFS file system, which Fedora uses by default. The developers were in the thread apologizing, saying they had not tested on Fedora before release and were rushing out a patch.
It prompted the classic Hacker News joke from a commenter asking if 2026 is finally the year of the Linux desktop. But honestly, despite the rocky launch on Fedora, people are thrilled this tool finally exists in the Linux ecosystem.
Moving on to our second story, which also broke 1,000 points. The Electronic Frontier Foundation, the EFF, announced they are officially leaving X, formerly Twitter, after nearly 20 years on the platform.
This is a huge shift. The EFF laid out the math in their post, and it is pretty staggering. Back in 2018, they were getting 50 to 100 million impressions a month. Last year, their entire year of posts got about 13 million impressions. They said an X post today gets less than 3% of the views a single tweet delivered 7 years ago.
The comment section was heavily debating why that drop happened. Some users, like Spopejoy, argued that a 98% drop is not an accident, suggesting the EFF is being actively shadow banned or suppressed by the platform owner.
But other users pointed out that the demographics of X have just fundamentally changed since Elon Musk took over. A lot of the people who would naturally engage with the EFF have simply migrated to Mastodon or Blue Sky.
What I found really interesting was the EFF addressing the obvious hypocritical elephant in the room. People immediately asked, why leave X but stay on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok?
Their answer was very pragmatic. They said their presence on those platforms is not an endorsement. They stay because marginalized groups, activists, and small businesses are still trapped in those walled gardens. The EFF wants to reach people where they are, especially the ones most subjected to corporate surveillance. They basically said, X is no longer where the fight is happening.
In the comments, there was a big debate about whether the EFF has shifted from being a politically neutral digital rights organization to a more partisan one. But as one user pointed out, holding governments accountable and expecting privacy used to be a bipartisan agreement. It is wild how much the landscape has shifted.
Speaking of those walled gardens, our next story is about Meta. Axios reported that Meta is actively removing advertisements that attempt to recruit plaintiffs for social media addiction lawsuits against the company.
This one got a lot of traction, over 500 points.
Meta actually gave a quote to Axios saying, "We will not allow trial lawyers to profit from our platforms while simultaneously claiming they are harmful."
That quote is just incredible. They are saying the quiet part out loud. In the Hacker News comments, people immediately started comparing it to the tobacco industry. A user named Pixel97 joked, "Imagine tobacco lawyers saying that putting warning labels on cigarettes would be devastating to their profits."
Exactly. Another user pointed out that Meta is an advertising company first and foremost. They hold a dominant position in the social advertising market. So if you are a lawyer trying to reach people who might be addicted to social media, the only effective way to reach them is on social media.
A commenter named Data Ottawa brought up the double standard. They said Meta will gladly run fake ads featuring the Canadian Prime Minister to front crypto scams with zero due process. But the moment a legal class action threatens Meta, they suddenly find their editorial judgment and block it.
It brings up the age-old debate on Hacker News about whether these platforms are open squares or private publishers. If Meta is actively curating out legal advertisements that threaten their bottom line, it really weakens their argument that they are just a neutral platform hosting third-party content.
Though, to be fair, a commenter named Roysting brought up the other side of the coin. They pointed out that a lot of these class action lawsuits are funded by private equity firms. The lawyers and investors end up making tens of millions of dollars, while the actual victims see pennies. So it is a battle between two very profit-driven entities.
Let us pivot to something a bit more community-driven. Thunderbird put out a call for donations to help keep the project alive. They noted that less than 3% of their users actually fund the work they do.
Thunderbird has had such a fascinating journey. It used to be tightly coupled with Mozilla. Then it was spun out, and now it lives under MZLA, a subsidiary created to give it a legal and financial home.
The real story here was in the comments. Ryan Sipes, the CEO of MZLA, jumped into the thread to answer questions and give some massive updates on their roadmap for 2026.
Yes, Ryan dropped some major news. He announced they are launching Thundermail this year, which is their own email service. A lot of users have been asking for help getting off Gmail, and Thundermail is going to be based on the open source Stalwart server.
People were super excited about that. Users were immediately asking if it would support custom domains and unlimited aliases. Ryan confirmed custom domains will be supported out of the box and dropped a link to the waitlist.
He also talked about where the donation money goes. A huge chunk of it is going to developers. They recently landed Microsoft Exchange support, which is huge for enterprise users. Next up, they are working on Microsoft Graph API support, and then JMap.
They are also working on a native iOS app, which is something the community has wanted forever. But there was some pushback in the comments regarding financial transparency. A user named Doing is Learning brought up the high executive compensation at the broader Mozilla Foundation and asked for more granular reporting on how Thunderbird specifically spends its money.
Ryan handled it well, linking to their specific financial reports and promising a detailed breakdown for 2025 soon. It is clear they are trying to build a sustainable business model beyond just asking for donations, and offering a privacy-respecting email service seems like a really smart way to do that.
All right, our final story today is a wild one from the geopolitical sphere. An article from the Free Press titled, "The Pentagon Threatened Pope Leo XIV's Ambassador with the Avignon Papacy."
This is one of those stories where you have to read the headline twice. For context, we are looking at the fallout from the recent ceasefire in the Iran war. According to the report, the Undersecretary of War for Policy, Albert Colby, summoned the Vatican ambassador to the Pentagon for a closed-door meeting.
The article states that Colby and his team basically lectured the cardinal about American military supremacy. The Pope had recently given a speech criticizing diplomacy based on force, which the Pentagon took as a direct attack on the administration's new Donroe Doctrine.
The Donroe Doctrine being their updated version of the Monroe Doctrine. The meeting apparently got so heated that an unnamed U.S. official brought up the Avignon Papacy. Mike, for those who need a history refresher, that was the period in the 14th century when the French crown used military force to basically kidnap the papacy and force the Pope to live in France.
Bringing that up to a Vatican ambassador is an explicit threat of military force against the Holy See. As a result, the Vatican has completely shelved plans for Pope Leo to visit the United States for the 250th anniversary this July. Instead, he is going to Lampedusa to visit migrants.
The Hacker News comments were just stunned. A user named Dr. Love pointed out that the Catholic Church has been playing the long game for 2,000 years, and threatening them like this shows a massive lack of historical awareness by the current administration. they compared the whole Iran war situation to the American Suez Crisis.
Yeah, the Suez Crisis comparison came up a lot. People feel like this is the moment the U.S. overplayed its hand globally. There was also a lot of discussion about the fallout from the Iran war, specifically how Iran is now taxing shipping in the Strait of Hormuz, which they never did before the conflict.
And the comments got even darker, discussing rumors that the administration is looking at Cuba next. A user named I Must Ask for Help said they thought the Cuba rumors were just a joke, but others pointed out the long-standing grievances certain politicians have there. It is a really tense time, and the Hacker News community is clearly feeling the anxiety about where this is all heading.
That is definitely a heavy story to end the week on. But it is a fascinating look at how tech, politics, and global power are intersecting right now.
That is all we have for you today on HN Pod. Thank you so much for listening.
If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend or leave us a review. We will be back on Monday to cover the weekend stories. Have a great weekend, everyone.
See you next time.